Today's episode of the Hash Rate Podcast is brought to you by Luxor Technology, North America's largest mining pool. Luxor's goal is to operate enterprise-class mining pools with professionalism and an intense customer focus. They provide a top-notch user experience and have a great selection of pools for you to mine to, from a variety of notable altcoins to Big Daddy Bitcoin, for which they launched their mining pool in October, so be sure to go and check them out. We are incredibly grateful that Luxor has chosen to sponsor this show going into 2020. We would love it if you, as listeners, would support the show by supporting them. You can find them online at luxor.tech and give them a follow on Twitter at Luxor Tech Team. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Hash Rate Podcast, the best crypto mining podcast in the history of the world. On today's episode, I am joined by my good friend Charles Reed. Charles recently published an article on Hacker Noon about central bank digital currencies and stablecoins. I wanted to have him on the show to discuss his thoughts on their paths to mass adoption and how he feels the current global situation may lead to a faster adoption of CBDCs and stablecoins. I found this to be a very interesting conversation. Towards the end, Charles and I have a bit of fun talking about where we feel certain trends may emerge, which business opportunities may present themselves towards the end of the current global crisis, and just taking an entrepreneur's positive mindset into the situation that we're facing and understanding that from every negative situation in life, there are always going to be positives and silver linings that present themselves. And we just, you know, have a pretty loose conversation about where we feel some of these trends may emerge. So hopefully you guys enjoy this show as much as I did. And if you do, please make sure that you leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. And as always, today's episode of the Hashrate Podcast is presented to you by Hashrate OS. Hashrate OS is a Linux-based operating system designed to help you increase the efficiency of your mining machines and maximize your overall profitability. Now with ASIC and GPU support, Hashrate OS provides the best experience in crypto mining, allowing you to manage your facility fully from any mobile device and take complete control of your mining operations. Hashrate OS is mining as it should be. Be sure to head over and check out the Hashrate operating system at os.hashrate.com. Again, that's os.hashr8.com. All right, without further ado, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Hashrate Podcast. I'm the Bitcoin Broski, and I've got a very special guest today. This gentleman and I have gone back and forth with conversations for the better part of 2 years. He has been incredibly helpful at certain times in my crypto journey, whether it's, you know, giving me guidance on all things crypto, providing certain introductions to people that we could have on the podcast. And he was also very instrumental in giving some early advice as I was getting Hashrate underway. So I'm excited that we're able to have this time to chat on the show. He is currently head of Zumo Kit. And I'm excited to welcome to the show, Charles Reed. Charles, welcome, man.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the nice intro. It's good to be here, man.
I'm really glad that we're finally able to do this. I know we've been talking about
we've been trying for a while, but you know, all good things happen eventually, eh?
Absolutely. I know I gave a brief intro there, but I'd love to hear more about what exactly Zumo is and what you're doing in that role and the broader picture of what you've got going on in crypto right now.
So Zumo is an innovative crypto wallet, and it's for sending, storing, and spending cryptocurrency. Currently just moved to mainnet this week, so we support Ether and Bitcoin as storage and send. It's really, really slick app, and we are adding stablecoins soon. So you'll actually be able to pay with Bitcoin, ETH, and stablecoins at, you know, pretty much any retailer. We do have plans for a debit card as well, and it's just going to be an airtight, but it's very, very secure, and it is really decentralized. So you can look at it as a Wirex, but it's a little bit more in the power of the people. Happy to talk more about that if anyone has any questions. As for Zumo Kit, it is our SDK. So it's for basically building your own white label crypto wallet. It's basically plug and play. It's good for first time blockchain developers. If you've never worked with blockchain before, you can still use Zumo Kit, and you can actually, you know, link up with the chain, and it just makes things really easy. So we're kind of, you know, marketing Zumo Kit at crypto companies who need a wallet for their token or need to build some kind of wallet infrastructure for their project. So if they're building a dApp and they have a lot of users and they really need, you know, an innovative wallet system, then we're helping to do that. But Zumo Kit's basically open source. So if anyone's interested in doing that, obviously get in touch. And then I actually work with a company called Launch Team, which is a consulting and marketing agency based out of LA, and doing that with two good friends of mine, Jared and Jesse. And we're not just working on blockchain stuff, but nearly at the moment exclusively is blockchain. And that is, you know, traditional consulting, management consulting, and marketing.
Nice. So how did you meet up with Jared and Jesse in California and get that marketing company off the ground and launch? What was it that led you to getting that started?
So I met Jesse in Puerto Rico back in 2018. We just hit it off really quick. You know, me and Jesse get on really well. And I ended up working with his previous venture, Block Team, because Jesse's done Launch Team for a while. He's actually an author, so he's helped to launch books. But he did Block Team, and I actually did a lot of work with Block Team, which was obviously a blockchain marketing and consulting agency. And we worked on a lot of projects together. And Jared also did the same. He was also part of the Block Team family. So we've been really working together since pretty much early 2018. And Launch Team is just a newer iteration of how we are working with businesses now. So it's not just blockchain-enabled companies, but it's technology companies, really. We are still helping to launch books, but more so it's a tech company.
Awesome, man. So you are also right now in the throes of some pretty serious stablecoin research. And I know you are publishing a paper today, right? Today it's publishing, is that correct?
I've submitted it for review on Hacker Noon and a few other publishing sites. It's just, this one's just an article. There is plan for potentially some very, very heavy research. I'm actually at the moment exploring kind of drafting responses to the Central Bank of England have a public report out on central bank digital currency. And I'm going through the throes of kind of responding to them and responding to some pretty big organizations, just because this stuff is really very bleeding edge. And I'd like to be very much on the front foot and contributing valuable insight to that space. So the article comes out today, and it's about, you know, cryptocurrency as money and the evolution of stable coins. And my previous article is about how close we are to a cashless society, particularly with COVID, and people are really now not spending cash unless you're, you know, still out and around and not locked down. But cash is just, you know, on the decline massively. A lot of countries are also talking about massive, you know, reductions in cash spend. So yeah, that's really what I've been working on, but no academic paper out just yet, but it is the plan.
So let's talk about stablecoins then. Obviously, with the research that you've done and looking into these deeply, I mean, it's clear that stablecoins are a very important part of this ecosystem. In all that you are doing now and the article that you've just written, are you looking at specific stablecoins? Are you limiting it to, you know, Tether, TrueUSD? Which stablecoins are you looking at specifically?
Just as kind of a foreword on this, when we think about stablecoins, we just think about it in the trading sense. But there's a much bigger play there of cryptocurrency as money, because Bitcoin isn't really stable money. It doesn't work as money. It's being used as money in a lot of underbanked countries or countries with economic decline because it works better than their currency does. But mostly what they're using it for is to get USD. So they get Bitcoin and then they get USD with the Bitcoin. For example, Venezuela. But when I'm looking at stablecoins, I'm looking at a lot of different types, but mostly we kind of put them into three baskets. So you have the off-chain backed, which are backed by like the dollar assets off-chain. So the dollar or the pound. So you have TrueUSD or TrueGBP, for example, which is a regulated stablecoin. Then you have on-chain asset backed, like MakerDAO, which is collateralized by crypto. And then algorithmic. So, you know, Basis, for example, who raised like 130 mil from the top VCs in the world to basically create sound money, which is not influenced by any external financial forces like the price of the dollar or the pound. It's just purely looked after by code. So algorithmic's the hardest, of course, to kind of get right, but it's really interesting. So looking at that a little bit, but then, you know, you also have your central bank digital currencies. So you have this new type, which is CBDC, issued by the bank, which represents digital fiat, basically. And I think, you know, people are aware by now that China announced plans to kind of roll out that digital yuan, and they're making really good headway there.
Oh, okay. That's what I was just going to ask. How close are they to actually rolling that out?
I mean, you can never tell with China, sure. But you know that they're probably closer. They're not. So I think within 5 years, that will be like rolled out across all of China. I think 5 years is probably on the longer side. They could have it as fast as two. But yeah, I think 5 years tops for all of China to be on that yuan.
Well, I mean, their society is already very attuned to digital money. I mean,
exactly.
They don't use paper money anyway, right? Everything's basically through WeChat and Alipay.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're already familiar with that. So yeah, China have announced that and they're working pretty aggressively on that. And then I don't know if you saw this, but the US digital dollar was kind of part of a coronavirus relief bill.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and that's later. Well, it's actually in two bills and it's been removed from both, which is, you know, kind of typical, but it was interesting. Really interesting. And then thirdly is the Central Bank of England, as I mentioned, you know, in the intro, that they're exploring CBDCs and they've issued a public discussion paper and you can respond to that, which is, you know, what I'm planning to do. But yeah, there's a lot going on.
All right. So a part of me sees and understands that this is the natural evolution of things, right? Like paper money will eventually go away. I mean, now they have the ability to tie paper money to this terrible pandemic and how it's transmitting this virus. But a part of me is also incredibly worried for personal privacy when these CBDCs roll out, because let's just take the digital dollar as an example. If the United States would have rolled out this digital dollar as part of this stimulus package to where they were, you know, tracking and able to facilitate these payments to people in an easier quote unquote way, I just worry that we'd be giving up so much of our liberties to receive money and transact in this way that it would be counterintuitive. I mean, specifically to everything that crypto stands for, but to the freedoms that a lot of, you know, first world nations have become used to.
Absolutely. And I think in China, it will be even worse. I mean, they're already kind of used to this surveillance state mentality of money, but it really is quite scary, the control that they would have over your money. You know, they can freeze it instantly. It would be pretty much impossible to transact privately. I say that, but, you know, the Bank of England, for example, have expressed a lot of information in their public paper about private transactions, but the bank will probably ultimately have final say over that. So it is a bit scary because, you know, your control over money is one of your fundamental rights, how you transact with people. So that is a bit scary. But one of the things I've looked at is how CBDCs, I mean, they're not just going to get the final word here. You know, there is competition. I mean, look at Libra, for example. That's why they're smacking down Libra, because it's a network of 2.5 billion people or more, 2.8. And if you suddenly have 2.8 billion people, a lot of which don't have a bank, bear in mind, and now suddenly you have given them borderless banking infrastructure, that is, you know, that's really impressive.
I mean, Facebook so becomes the largest nation.
It does. It does. And the biggest bank in the world. So, you know, it connects nearly a quarter of the planet. You know,
so
it's
now,
really crazy.
But I mean, so then we run into the situation where, I mean, do we really want Zuckerberg in charge of
exactly
those two things? I mean,
their history with our data is not good, is it? You know, it's really not good. And this is why, so, you know, I'm really exploring these relationships, you know, the CBDCs, the corporate, you know, issued new public payments infrastructures like Libra, and then the public blockchain asset-backed coins and the algorithmic, because they all have a place, right? And they're all kind of fighting over, like, you know, control of the new financial systems of the world, because they are being built and they are being used. There's just a lack of interfaces at the moment. But once them interfaces are there, I think it's going to be really difficult to, you know, turn away from it now. So yeah, right now is, you know, Libra fighting with governments, and then the governments trying to attract the right talent so that they can still build CBDCs. But it's hard to get the right talent because the top cryptographers, they don't tend to go and work for, you know, the public sector. They work for, you know, the Libras who pay more, or, you know, the private blockchain companies. So that's really interesting too.
I mean, what's the thought? Where are we going to be on all of this in the next year or two?
So I think more and more countries will start to announce plans for CBDC, and then we'll start to see more interfaces being built where people can actually spend existing stable coins with retailers. It's really not that far off. And I think once that's possible, more and more people will be doing it. So I think, you know, smart wallet software, and this is one of the reasons why I just think Zumo is just a killer idea. Smart wallet software is really going to liberate the benefits of that stablecoin spending power that's currently just sat on exchanges. It's just being used to trade. It's not being spent. So that's exciting. And I think, you know, within 2 years, we'll see some movement from Libra. But I think out of all of these types that I've kind of looked at, the corporate created public infrastructures are going to be the hardest ones. So, you know, the corporate coins, they are going to have the most trouble because they're just going to have to run the gauntlet. So yeah, that's where I see things. It's hard to kind of predict, but things are just panning out slowly, and it seems like there's a lot of, it's very politicized at the moment. and it will get more and more politicized as time goes by.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine in a place like Europe where there's been so much work and effort to get the euro widely adopted, and I mean basically 2 decades of effort to bring as many nations under the euro as possible to strengthen it, this could very easily revert everything back to, you know, small independent nations that are operating their own currency. I mean, right now, I think that with COVID, the one glaring inefficiency that I think is being brought to light is globalization. Because although globalization seems like an amazing thing, when you look at now how deeply impacted the entire global economy was because of our reliance on China, it brings to light the fact that it's just not a good idea to put all of your eggs in one basket. And if something happens to that basket, you're stuck. So there is this movement back towards nationalism. I mean, in the States, Trump has been pushing this agenda for a while, right? Like, make America great again is, you know, the spark.
Yeah, it ties into his campaign, really, doesn't it?
Because
it's all about bringing the power back to within the borders rather than, you know, all the manufacturing being overseas and such.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, love it or hate it, I mean, people have different opinions. From a business standpoint, I can certainly see the value in American-made products and how that can best serve the national economy. And frankly speaking, as, you know, someone who grew up as a kid in the late 80s or early 90s in the States, the quality of life was much higher in America when we produced more things in country. So since manufacturing and those jobs and that industry has moved out of the country, quality of life has fallen, right? The wealth gap has grown. There's just not as much opportunity as there once was, and people are feeling it. And I mean, that's everywhere, right? Because China became this 800-pound gorilla that was attracting all of the quality industrial jobs. So I think that this pandemic, this crisis, I mean, this depression that we're getting ready to face, coupled with the idea of nationalism coming back into the limelight and the potential for these stable coins to be printed by each country's central bank, who knows? There could be some irreparable changes made,
I think so,
in the next couple of years.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on the topic of bringing more national interest back, I do think as well that we're going to see more and more like microeconomies emerge. So you're going to have small communities of people who have new ways to spend their money and new money to spend as well. And that's what cryptocurrency is really also allowing, is for more choice in money. And I think, you know, for example, the concept of dollarization and, you know, being able to spend dollars in countries where the local currency is not stable enough. And you see this in more and more countries that they slowly move towards the dollar because their country's currency is devalued. But I think stable coins offer a new way of looking at that because they allow small communities to basically spend how they want with these new coins. So for example, if you're in, let's say, Chile or Argentina, you'll be able to use a Swiss franc or a euro or a dollar or a pound, and you'll be able to use them on your mobile phone. And all you need is someone on the other side of the trade who would accept that. And I think more and more people are going to want to, especially if we do start to see some significant economic changes, people are going to want to hedge. And then even more interesting on that concept is creating stable coins out of a basket of other currencies. So you could have 5 currencies which back one new stable coin, and then that would be even more stable. And
people, it's almost like an index.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there's that's a possibility, you know, whether or not that happens on a big scale, probably not, but it's already happening and has happened for hundreds of years with fiat money. So why wouldn't it happen with digital money? And the thing is, people think there's this huge barrier to entry. There is at the moment, but all you need to make a Bitcoin wallet is an internet connection. Now, it's only so long before you can do the same thing with your mobile phone with all of these stable coins, because you just need the right interfaces, you know, to be there. And it is a long journey, particularly for underbanked countries, but they just need a mobile phone and a very simple interface, and then they suddenly have a bank account. There are really heavy ramifications there.
It's going to be interesting to see all of this unfold. I've talked about this a couple of times. By any stretch of the imagination, this is a terrible scenario that we're in right now. And hopefully it's the worst economic situation that any of us experience in our lifetimes. But coming out of this, there's going to be some amazing new opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very easy to buy into all of the negativity and the media hype cycle and all the doom and gloom. But man, I'm really super excited and hopeful for the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to this, because we're going to come out of it.
Of course.
This will end. You know, when you're going through the shit, I mean, we just came through a really tough bear market, right? So when you're in that bear market, it was like, we're never going to come out of this bear market, but you get through it, you know?
And it's a period of innovation, right? Because more and more people, I mean, I don't know if you heard, it's a bit gimmicky, but some of the best discoveries or innovations of our time in human history were during, you know, epidemics or pandemics or, you know, global crises. So, you know, there's definitely an opportunity there for people to really innovate, and especially developers and people who work well on a computer. We're hyper-connected. There is so much information at our fingertips. And if people utilize it correctly, then we could really create some very cool stuff. I'm really excited to see what people can pull off as well. And I think crypto people and blockchain people in general, you know, a lot of them work remotely or from home, or they're nomads. So they're going to continue to build the way they were, which is also good to know.
Aside from stablecoins and CBDCs, what are some of the ways that you think life or work will be changed through this crisis? I mean, do you think we're ever going to go back to having massive central offices, or will movie theaters reemerge? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? And the fact that you've asked them questions is quite interesting to me, because I thought about them things, but I didn't think anyone else would maybe be thinking that there is a very real possibility that we will never return to the way of life that we were at before. You know, the whole world will fundamentally kind of shift. And I think, yeah, we will go back to kind of office block working and stuff, but there'll be a way more relaxed approach to work from home. I think there'll be more tools to do so. I think VR in the workplace is going to be huge as well. I think we're going to see some massive breakthroughs during this period for VR, for that concept, you know, training people, training environments using VR and AR. I think the world will look a lot different. It will hopefully look more sensible for at least a decade or so, but then we are likely to go back to this hustle and bustle that just seems to be the default. You know, I know it's funny because everyone says we are the virus, you know, the world's healing while we're staying at home, and you know, the rivers are clear again. And it's, you know, it's funny, but I mean, we do kind of look from, you know, a macro scale, like bacteria, the way we grow over the planet, and we cause damage, irreparable damage, and staying at home it's probably is healing a little bit. But
well, I mean, there's a theory behind that too. There's a theory that when a living organism is hurting or dying, we all have an immune system that responds. And
yes,
there is a theory that this virus is just the Earth's immune system wiping out the scourge or the virus, which in this case is us. Yeah. You know,
it's funny, right? Because, you know, I mean, we can get into that because I love that stuff. And one thing I've been following for the past kind of 3 or 4 years is the potential bacteria and viruses and whatever that might be locked in the ice caps. And the ice caps are melting, and this stuff's been frozen for God knows how long, and now suddenly it's releasing all of this bacteria. And there's some really extensive studies on that. Some really scary stuff is going to be in the water. So yeah, I think, you know, just going back before we go on a tangent there, but which is easily done. But yeah, just going back, I do think that we will shift the way that we, you know, interact and work, and we'll see some really interesting breakthroughs in VR and money and interaction. But I don't know if it will last. I think we have that mentality to just kind of keep moving and keep breeding and keep, you know, consuming. And I think we'll get back to that place once this blows over.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I'm convinced that we are moving slowly but surely towards the world in Ready Player One. So, you know, I think that this this is a catalyst in that direction, right? This is definitely going to move us closer towards that. I said 2 years ago, the first company that gets a multi-directional trackpad up and running for VR is going to be a massive, massive unicorn that I'd love to invest in.
Yeah.
And I think that's the missing piece right now. If you're able to work from home, you can entertain yourself at your home. You're able to game at home. You're able to live in a virtual world when you're not working. The only thing that's needed is the ability to put you in that place for a set amount of time so you can get used to it. That's the barrier, right? Because
and this is it.
For us to transition from a world where we're out and about to a world where we're basically homebound, it just takes some forced time at home, because we're all creatures of habit. You know, change is tough for anyone. We all are able to fall into these habits. Like, now is day 30 for some of their quarantine. It's day 15 for some of their quarantine. Everyone's falling into these either very healthy or very unhealthy or very mediocre routines. And given enough time, they're going to see the results. And you know, just as we continue down this path, if Americans are quarantined for another 45 days, which is what it's looking like, I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities to get them to never want to leave their house again. I mean, I think as it is now, very few people over the age of 30 really care to interact with anyone in real life.
Yeah.
know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like once you've got your mate, once you've got some kids, once you've got some income, I mean, you're not really looking to go out.
You don't really need anyone else.
You know what I mean? Like how often are you going to go out and like hang out with the guys and get smashed or whatever people are you know, doing in their 20s nowadays, but just assume it's the same as what I did. But
yeah, it is.
It's exciting. I think there's a lot of opportunities that are presenting themselves. And you're right. The last recession birthed Uber, Slack, and a handful of other billion-dollar companies that have really shaped that decade since, right?
Absolutely. And they're being used now in the next recession. So this is, you know, the other way of looking at it. The stuff that's going to get built over the next year or two is probably going to be, you know, absolutely pivotal in moving us forward, you know, technologically. And I, that's why I think, you know, the next wave is VR, is cryptocurrency and blockchain, is big data and AI. And it's because the last wave, this was 2008. So it's still building intelligent interfaces for globalization, basically for working remotely. And all of them things are so useful to us now. So I'm really excited to see what we build in the next 2 years. And then when it really becomes really useful.
Yeah, as am I. The resourcefulness, the scrappiness, the dedication that it's going to take for entrepreneurs to build through this downturn is going to show real mettle. And I mean, VCs are going to be tightening their belts too. So it's highly unlikely that you're going to get millions upon millions in multiple rounds of funding without showing value during this time. I mean, if this lasts for a couple of years, a lot of the companies that exist right now are going to go under. I mean, I say if this lasts for more than another 6 months, then we're going to see a massive drop off in the amount of startups that are still in business. Mm. And the VCs that I've talked to right now, they're not investing in anything late stage. It's only seeds and Series A.
Yeah.
And even then, they are really being sticklers on your path to profit and your business model.
Yeah. And valuations are kind of being sliced in half and it's going to be very cutthroat. But I think, you know, the yeah, absolutely. Because it's going to expel a lot of competition, you know, in any sector. But I think what's interesting as well is seeing, for example, all these airlines kind of go broke within a month of, you know, if despite being in the $1 billion profit margin, they're going broke within a month. But what you are going to see is, you know, once any company building now that can launch when this blows over, they can just steal all the competition. I think travel companies are going to do exceptionally well when all this kind of blows over because people are going to want to go on holiday. They're going to want to travel. Gig economy, because so many people are losing their jobs. So one of the startups that I'm working with is actually my girlfriend's startup, but I've been working with her before she was my girlfriend. So it's still very much a very interesting business to me. It's a gig economy marketplace and it lets you monetize, you know, secondary skills you have. And I think that's going to be really big because more and more people have lost their jobs. They're looking for side hustles and they want to make money on the side to survive, really. So I think there's a lot of new sectors that will kind of emerge as big investment trends and investors who are on the front foot with that stuff, they're going to make a lot of money because, you know, it's like buy the blood, but it's actually what you're doing is you're just buying stuff which is going to have way more use in 6 or 12 months when, you know, things blow over, hopefully.
Yeah. And there's so many products out there that were born just to service startups. You know, you look at like cap table management products or tax or accounting products, things that are basically just built on the laziness or the ineptitude of the CEOs or the founders. They're basing that on the experience. I think there's a huge opportunity for someone who's scrappy to just start cold calling these companies and saying, hey, I'm a person. I can charge you 50% of what some of these companies that target small to medium businesses are going to charge. I can give you a personal touch and I can, you know, be everything for your company that that product would be. And I think that there's such opportunity for somebody to really step in because right now, I think more than I've ever seen, people really want to help other people. And it's yeah, showing that, you know, it's showing that we'd much rather support a person than a product.
Yeah. It's showing the best and worst of people, right? It's really good to see the best of people. And there is a lot of collaboration happening. And interestingly enough, I've kind of had some really beneficial conversations the past few weeks because I think people, they want to feel connected again and they do that by kind of hooking each other up and helping each other out. So yeah, I completely agree. That's a really good play for anyone who also might be, you know, looking for work. There's, you know, cutting out some of this software for these companies that scaled too quick. And now, you know, this recession is going to hit them really hard. Approaching them and offering services that software was doing for them before is a really good idea. So yeah, definitely agree with you.
Well, dude, I'm really glad that we were able to have this conversation. It's nice to be able to just riff every once in a while, you know?
Yeah, man.
I'm really happy that we were finally able to do this, Charles. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, me too. It was a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me. And, you know, if you ever want me pop back on, just give me a shout. Obviously, I've got a lot of time on my hands at the moment. And talking about this stuff helps me learn about it too. So that's really, really key for me. I find education in myself when I educate others. So if anyone else wants to talk, I'd love to talk about this stuff, as you probably just figured out. So yeah, thanks for having me, man. And take care. Stay safe.
Absolutely, Charles. You as well, man. And best of luck with everything you've got coming up in the future. And for the listeners out there, thank you so much for continuing to tune in. Obviously, these are weird times, and you know, we at the Hash Rate Podcast really appreciate you taking a part of your day out to spend it with us. So, you know, from us here at the podcast, until the next time that we all speak, I hope that you guys stay safe. Thanks for tuning into the Hash Rate Podcast. We appreciate your continued support. Please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform, and head over to Twitter and give us a follow at Hash Rate. That's at H4SHR8.